to Movie Night with your hosts, Dwayne Perkins and TK Kelly.
Welcome, everyone, to the Movie Night Podcast. I am TK Kelly, joined, as always, by my hilarious co-host, Mr. Dwayne Perkins. Each and every week, we watch a movie, we invite a guest to watch that very same movie, and we talk about that movie.
That's what we do. That's what we do. And this week, we have a very special guest. This guy is someone I've gotten to know over the past 2 or 3 years. We've collaborated on a project that we made together called Black Ice that he directed. I kind of co-starred in and we co-wrote. We have since wrote a feature called Black Ice about the first African-American curling team. It's a comedy, if you're wondering. He also has some very great and insightful and funny PSAs called Just Saying. They're available at his website, which all of that goes under his name. Brent Bishop is our guest. And he's fearless, too. We'll talk about that. Welcome. Thanks for joining us, Brent.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good to be here.
Hey, thanks for doing it, man. How's everything? What's going on?
Oh, everything's good. You know, last couple days, including just today, I was at the American Film Market talking about our new project, the new feature version of Black Ice. So just keeping the mouth moving, pressing the flesh, spreading the good word.
Hollywood slinging.
Yeah.
Fancy. Oh, man. And Brent is, he's poetry in motion. Like, I grew up with guys who had the gift of gab and, like, you know, have uncles and cousins that can just talk like nobody's business. But they can talk on a street level like nobody's business. I'm not sure if you drop them in an office, they would really feel comfortable, you know? But Brent, like, I literally was just standing behind him, letting him talk. Just because when he gets to that point where, especially in LA, I feel like they import people like this into LA. Like, if you are, you know how pretty people come here?
Yeah, sure.
I know that's why I'm roundabout. Here. Right, exactly. Yeah. That's you. They made you come here. But you know who else is sort of encouraged to come here? Gatekeepers, people who are really good at being dismissive. Like, if you're a girl in Iowa and your thing is just you're really good at saying, yeah, but actually, no. Ooh, yeah. The thing is, like, if you're good at that, come to LA. You'll get a job.
Thrive.
And what Brent does is when he gets that, where I would be pissed, either mad or cower or just something that causes me to walk away, he just keeps going.
Just power through.
Yeah. Like, but not dismissive. Like, he acknowledges that they basically said no. And he just goes, yeah, yeah. Here's the thing, though. I was wondering, and I'm looking at him like, fuck, she just was a bitch to us, and you just powered through. It's amazing, man. Yeah.
That's how most things happen, I feel like, in Hollywood. It's just right. Like, I don't know. I thought I said no, but right. At a certain point, I was just signing a check. Right.
I appreciate how sleazy this all can sound, too. But what I'd like to point out is that I really just have been tapping into how much I enjoy talking with people.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we're just all here. The cartoon piano could come down at any time and end it all. And I'm just like trying to spend quality time with whoever happens to be right in front
of me. No, yeah. It's not like you're hustling them. That's the thing. It's like, and that's why they can't. Listen, we ran into some at this film market. There's some yahoos there.
Yeah,
that's the thing about LA too. Like,
good
Hollywood,
way of putting it.
Hollywood always lets a certain amount of yahoos come in, which sort of justifies the rudeness. Because you're like, we get it. Like,
we deal in volume.
2 out of 10 people are just complete yahoos who,
yeah,
you don't even know how they got into the building.
That's generous.
And yeah, right, exactly.
He's feeling like 6 out of 10.
But because Brent, you don't like. You don't take offense because you understand that the last 3 guys were yahoos. It's just something you're not even hustling them, and then they have nothing to do but like give you more time because they were rude, like just on the verge of being like super disrespectful, and you didn't like accept it. You didn't let it faze you, and then they're like, "Fuck, I can't." It's like, you know, it's. I mean, I know it's a little crazy, but it's almost like. Like the nonviolent MLK stuff. It's where it's like,
that's what I keep telling everybody.
You know, like someone's
definitely lead with that.
Someone's spraying you
right? To Martin Luther King.
But you know, top. Like someone's hitting you, you're not hitting them back. They can't keep hitting you.
Yeah,
they have to be like next level insane at some point to just.
And there are some of those here too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Mom always said you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was fun. It was fun being there and with Brent and watching you in action. I would jump in and talk to people.
Yeah, you were invaluable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm as a comedian, you think I'd have that, but I just once someone is like super rude, I'm just like, okay, well, I'm just,
because you don't like me and I don't like you.
And also I feel like, well, I just think I'll be in a position where I can somehow have access to the people two or three levels above you. So I don't need to kiss your ass right now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I will
happily go around you.
Right.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, I do think that's a gift that comes in handy in Hollywood for sure, because I know what you're saying, Dwayne. Like, I feel like as a comic, you have a certain level of comfort just talking with people. But you can either deal with how shitty people can be by shutting down, or you can power through and still make your point. And that's something I wish I had more of too, because it's a lot. Right. I'm sort of with you where I'm just like, well, all right, fuck this.
Yeah, you know,
it's a great mentality.
It's like cultivating a win-win situation too. Like in a situation where I feel like I have something, or we have something to really offer them, and they've got a protocol. Well, it's kind of like seeing, can we deal without the protocol for a second and see if we can get to a point where they can really decide whether or not there's a win-win here. And when there's a situation where it's like, honestly, they don't want our thing or I don't want their thing, that's when it becomes a better time to like save time. And
that's true, because we actually ran into some douchebags, true life douche D-bags. And I don't know, maybe they
9 out of 10, would you say?
No, these guys were, maybe they reminded me of like guys I grew up with, because they were proper douchebags.
Yeah.
And you did, and that one scenario, Brent was like, okay, well, thank you for your time. Yeah. And I just kept talking to him, because like, these guys are dicks. And it just was like fun at some point.
Yeah. You know? Just mining them for comedy. Like,
right. You either have to burn this whole thing down or get out of here.
Right.
So tell us, why is he fearless? That's what, is this what you're talking about? Or were you insinuating something?
No, he is fearless. I don't know why. I mean, that's how we met. In fact, you saw my special, you came to see me. And for me, I've always felt like, hear people out, you know, which I have had like long conversations at gas stations with crazy people, you know, that went a little longer than I wanted to. But, you know, you seemed fine, and you gave me a link to something you had done, a very funny short. I watched it. I was like, this is great. Then we said, let's collaborate, and it just went from there. So, yeah, it's like you have something to offer them. And why you're fearless, I'm not sure. Maybe you're a musician. Do you do yoga? I'm not sure. But
where have you seen me be fearless?
I'm saying you were fearless at the AFM, I think. Oh, to me, that was fearlessness.
Just with
because
willingness to speak to people?
Yeah, well,
that's the level we're at. Like, dude, you spoke to people, like several people you didn't even know.
This is
you
the eye contact thing. Yeah.
Have no fear. No, you are basically Daredevil.
But you got to understand, like, some of the shade that is thrown is so heavy.
Yeah.
And that's where the fearlessness comes in, because she's like, you just take that shade and just sort of like
deflect.
Don't let it phase you and keep going. But in a way that no one's pissed off. It's not like, it doesn't register as like you just ignored them.
Yeah.
Or like you're just trying to like, you know, not respect their station. They have a job to do. So you like, you simultaneously respect their job, but then say, fuck your job.
Yeah, I got a job too.
right.
Which and is, I mean, I think it certainly doesn't hurt that you know what you have is funny. Mm-hmm. Like you have hard evidence of that. You have the short, which is hilarious and everyone should watch if they haven't yet. But like, I've read an earlier draft of the feature. I keep forgetting to get to the new one,
but I really want to because he gave me extensive notes, I loved the script.
It's great, and it's interesting to be in a position where you know that, where you're like, you're confident in what you're selling, instead of it being please help me out. It's like, let me give you this great thing and let's make something together.
Yeah. And like, you know, if someone doesn't have time for something too, I don't necessarily just babble and get nervous and babble more. So it's like, okay, if I thought we had 2 minutes, but it turns out we've got 5 seconds, I feel like I can get down to like, all right, I'm just going to say it in 5 seconds then. So that way, on the way out,
you're extremely zen. Yeah. I just
extremely zen.
Just got a calming presence.
Yeah, it's because you understand that. Like the one time, which is really interesting, maybe like the first or second girl we spoke to, so she's with a company. Now, here's the deal, is that this market is posed as something that's for films that are already made to get sold. But you're never going to be in a building with that many people who make films all at once that you can literally just walk down the hallway and talk to each one, even if you're being dismissed. So if you have a project that is not a screenplay that's not a movie yet, but it's written in like hours and you think it's great, you gotta go, right?
Yeah.
But they're all gonna say the same thing. We're only selling our projects we've already made, or we're looking for things that are already made. But it's like, you have to decide how to make things. Like,
yes,
there has to be a point, a place where you get your material from, and we're here offering you material. Mm-hmm. So the one girl we went to, she was kind of like threw a lot of shade, and she was like, "Yeah, we're just selling. We're not really taking anything." And he's like, "Well, I would like to talk to you about." She was like, "Okay, well, let me hear about it. You got 5 minutes." And only one project. She was just sort of like, but she was faking it. She was actually faking being a hard ass.
Yeah.
And then soon as Brent, we did the soft pitch, she was like, oh. And he's like, we got a short. And then she was like, you got it? Can I see it? Like, she was just trying to stump us.
Yeah, I
pulls out his computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it, bitch. Boop.
And no, then, I was lying. Exactly.
Right. And then she laughed. And then it was like, I guess that was when we proved we weren't yahoos, when she showed the quality of the show.
Well, yes, from their perspective too, it's got to be tough deflecting all the bullshit that's coming your way.
Right.
But it's senseless to have a mentality of we're only doing this. It's like, well, if the idea is amazing, you're telling me you're not gonna explore this further just because you're only here to do this one thing.
And part of it is I can put myself in their shoes because I've done lots of casting sessions and I go into it with my heart full of love and so much time for each person, and 300 people later, you've got the 100-yard stare, and when someone comes in and you just know it's not going to work out, one, it seems brutal to them to just let them keep going.
Right, and it's also brutal to yourself. Absolutely.
So I understand what it's like to get desensitized to the situation.
Right.
And then so, I'll just try and splash a little cold water on the face of us all there and do a little reset or something. And then if they don't want it, they don't want it.
Right. And what's weird is that, like, we went to one place and they were... A lot of these places... the film game is really wicked. I met with a friend recently who just had a film that was super successful, and he was like, I couldn't get a film deal. Like, he just had a film that like did way better than anyone thought, and he couldn't get a deal with a company to do more. Like, he it's still like, it's like an audience for stand-ups. It's like when you make an audience laugh a lot and then they get real quiet on the next joke, like they don't believe you're funny
equity.
Again,
yeah.
And you make them laugh again, then they get real quiet again, and you're like, don't you guys think, like, I've made you laugh 4 times in a row.
How many times do I have to prove it to you?
Right. And so that's where the film business is. A lot of the people we were talking to, they were saying things like, do you have funding? Do you have a star attached? Things that would, we talked about it, that if we had those things, we probably wouldn't be talking to you guys. So it's like, it's a chicken.
Or we'd
egg.
Be leading with that. You'd know about it. You'd leave first breath.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, we got Mark Wahlberg, but we didn't want to blow our load immediately.
Exactly.
So we wanted to annoy you for a while before we let you know.
And each company, they have the films they're currently making, like some posters outside their office or their room, whatever.
Best Foot Forward, whatever that is.
And so the lady was saying to Brent, we don't deal with first time directors. Now, Brent is not a first time director, but it would be first time directing a feature or a feature of that scale. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking back and forth. We get it. And then we look up their movie that they have on their wall, directed by
the one she's standing under.
Yeah, the movie she's standing next to.
It's called First Time Director.
Right.
Like, wait, what about that? What about also First Time Director Part 2?
It's a guy's directorial debut. So they just say things to say. And and so I appreciate it seeing you sort of like not take anything personal. And maybe that's not fearlessness, but that's how it registered to me,
Either way, you're obviously a hero. That's what you're out there doing the Lord's work here in Hollywood. Let's get into this movie.
Yeah. I was going to, I think you already said Mark, so that was good. That's a good enough transition.
Yes. Yeah, that's good enough. The movie we're talking about this week is starring Will Ferrell and Marky Mark Wahlberg. It's called The Other Guys from 2010, also starring Michael Keaton, Eva Mendes, Steve Coogan. Great cast, directed by Adam McKay. How did you guys feel about this movie?
Well, I realized I have a very complex relationship to this movie, because when you first said what movie it was going to be, I was kind of like, oh, shit. it. I remember like not purposely not watching this movie because of the poster and the trailer and being like, skip it. And I was like, okay, but you know, you've seen it multiple times.
Right, right.
You have good taste. I was like, I'll give it a whirl and we're going to talk about it. And it's going to be fun. And then as it, you know, started playing it, I was like, oh man, I don't want it. And then as it came on, I was like, oh, you know what? I think I've seen this.
Right, right.
And then I was like, I must have like started watching it and it was so crappy. I turned it off or something. And then I was like, but actually that scene was pretty good. And as I got into it, I was like, no, I've watched this whole movie and enjoyed it. And I'm enjoying it this time too.
So I'm obviously confusing this with another movie.
Right. I have this needlessly complex, amnesiac like relationship to this movie.
I feel the same way though. As far as when it came out, it just didn't like strike a chord with me at all. And I've been a fan of all the Adam McKay movies, especially the ones he did with Will Ferrell. They're amazing for the most part. Even the misses were like, yeah, that was totally worth watching, like fun enough. But this one just kind of slipped by me. And then when I finally watched it maybe 3 years ago, I was like, holy shit, this is kind of brilliant. It's so much more unique than I thought it was.
I agree with you guys. I think something about the poster, or you know, it's hard to go back in time and think of the context of what was happening, but maybe I don't think we would be going through like a Will Ferrell kind of fatigue.
It
but
could
maybe
have been. I mean, this was 2010, so this is definitely on the tail end of that string of Anchorman was long before this. Talladega Nights was before this.
Right.
I think even the basketball one might have been before this. But yeah. I think that was part of it. Was just like,
I'm going to serve up too that I think the poster and the trailer maybe just underserved it, because in your mind right now, Ron Burgundy on the poster of Anchorman, it's good. You know, like it, even that like makes me at least want to know more, who is this character. Mm-hmm. But even now when I look at the poster for this and it's Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell just swinging in, you know,
leaping through the air with their guns.
It looks sort of standard. I don't want to rip on that artist. Yeah, but it doesn't. Yeah. So it's like, okay.
Like a generic buddy cop comedy. Yeah. It's like, all right, I've seen this.
Yeah.
You know, odd pairing. Like it's
a better movie than that.
Definitely. You
know? Right.
Or it's at least more. Yeah. It's better and it's more specific. It's a unique movie.
And it doesn't capture, I think, because Mark Wahlberg is sort of like, now this is the guy who was in his underwear, you know, that's how we met him. I mean, he was a rapper before that. And so him on the poster with Will Ferrell, he's not dorky enough to just for it to sell what they wanted to sell.
Yeah.
You know, because it's the other guys, and Will Ferrell, you know, he's not a badass, but at the same time,
what is the joke of the poster kind of
thing? Right.
How about this? What if they pushed it a little bit more in a National Lampoon's Vacation, you know, Chevy Chase with the tennis racket? Like if they just pushed it a little bit into the absurdity that the film itself has.
I completely agree, because if you're going to go with a generic thing that's been done, why not fill a lot of those, you know, tick a lot of boxes of like dumb shit you see on cop movie posters, have them doing everything that's on. And then you get a clearer idea of how over the top and self-aware this whole movie is.
And give him a wooden gun and put the wooden gun in the poster. I know that's a joke that you want to save, but maybe, you know.
And then actually I would say, just going to the end of the movie, like I felt like the action parts with like the helicopter and all of that was kind of a waste of money, because it's not what I got into it anyway. Like I noticed how much this film cost and how much it made, and I was like, oh man, if you could cut a few helicopters out. And the poster, so because it was the least interesting part to me, I wanted to see those two talking and having their expectations screwed with. And so the poster kind of touches on, for me, the least interesting part of the whole film that I like. So maybe that's part of it too.
And you know, one of the most, a few things are amazing about this movie. Like the Ice-T narration is outrageous.
You like throughout it, keep forgetting about it.
Yeah, and then it comes back.
I love this.
And then, you know, the whole Samuel L. Jackson and the Rock thing.
Yes.
That's so fucking bananas, right?
That sets the tone for the movie in a way that, like, I can't remember the last time I saw something that sets up a film that well.
Right.
Where it was like completely unexpected. It's this massive shift in tone when they hit the sidewalk and all of a sudden you're like, wait. Right, I thought these were the guys. They were going to be the guys throughout the movie, and these two are the other guys.
Right, I'm going to say it's
fucking
this.
Die in yeah. such a dumb way. I love it so yeah. much.
It's this and Hitchcock's Psycho. That's it. Those right, are the right. two films that it's do like that.
They both perfected yeah. it.
Right, right.
10 out of 10. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I agree with you totally, because that chase scene epitomizes like the movies this movie is making fun of.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So then we don't even need another one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they died.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, and we learned that they were constantly doing shit like that for no good reason. Like they were getting, you
they
know, a bag of weed
idiots.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Now compare the fight scene at the end, which felt less glamorous to us even than the opening one, with the fight scene, the silent fight scene they have at the funeral when
so
they can't make noise and they're brawling and they're whispering and talking
right,
shit,
right.
whispering. Like that is the perfect action scene
exactly.
for this
yes.
film. It was
that's
hilarious.
It's an interesting point because this is a $100 million estimated budget.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, those sequences that they did them right. And you, I think you could argue in favor for them, saying this movie is, it looks to a T just like the movies it's parodying, which is interesting.
That's fair, yeah.
But on the same token, I agree with you where it was like, that all felt like filler to me. I just wanted more absurd comedy
yeah,
from this
right.
movie.
Like, I had never seen the silent funeral fight before. That was
that was great. But you know, the thing too is, it's weird how it ties in. We just came from the AFM, and one thing that people... Sometimes you feel it's a bit of a cheat or it's a bit of a cop-out, but people do throw around international. That word gets thrown
oh,
around
yeah.
a lot. And I'm not a movie mogul or anything, but everyone you talk to, and it's always the reason not to do a comedy, right? It's
mm-hmm.
kind of like comedies don't translate in China. Well, spend $10 million and make $40 million. Like, what are we saying here, mm-hmm. right? But this almost feels like someone was trying to like make sure this would do well
in the states,
in a place where they don't speak English.
That's a very good point,
you know?
Too, because like, I mean, it, also if you think about it, if you maybe don't even quite get what the humor of this movie is doing,
right.
it's still funny. Right. It's still like on its face funny with ridiculous moments. And then it's like entertaining enough. I'm sure there were some people even in that theater like, man, those! I can't believe how good that looked. I can't believe those
right.
chase scenes. I can't believe the helicopter
right.
shit. Like it's, there was... It was definitely broad appeal here.
So do you think if these numbers are rooted in reality, but $100 million budget for $117 million box office.
170
worldwide. Oh, 70.
Worldwide.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. 119 here.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a little different. So that's probably a B plus A minus win then,
yeah.
right? Which,
yeah.
Is that about how you'd rate that?
Yeah, this
right.
was. I was surprised. This is actually Will Ferrell's second biggest grossing movie behind Elf. And
oh, yeah? okay.
for me, I was like, this completely, I missed this completely. It seems crazy to me that could be true.
Right.
But this is him being paired with a huge actor at the, like, Wahlberg at this time, 2010, was
right.
like, he could do no wrong. Everybody was all about him. And now it's Will Ferrell and this other massive star.
Right, right.
The
right.
other movies were Will Ferrell movies.
Yeah.
Right.
This
well,
was
I mean,
like
Bob Newhart.
You know. I feel like this definitely was like, it got everybody interested.
Right, right, right.
You know, it got people who loved Mark Wahlberg and people who love Will Ferrell. And if you add those together, that's all of the people.
Right, right. But you're right. It could have easily cost $20 million less
mm-hmm.
and been as good.
But yeah, and I was thinking it didn't make, I was thinking 117. You know, they kind of doubled their box office. So maybe those helicopters earn their rent there.
Yeah, and you can see what a big chunk of that. I mean, $50 million of those profits are international, so it's
well,
definitely
right.
helped.
But the thing is,
humble pie over
there. Right, right. And it's super funny. But if I feel like if you wrote this movie and you weren't like, you know, plugged in the right way, and you gave it to people would like to sort of echo your thought. People would take the script and literally cross out all the action shit and be
yeah,
like,
yeah.
"We're not doing
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
We're not doing this."
I still
we're
think
not doing
you're
this.
Right. Like,
right.
It does feel like
that's
this almost feels too. Like these insanely great action sequences shoved into like the Naked Gun.
Yeah,
it's like, this
right.
doesn't, I don't need this here, but
that's
like
exactly
I guess
right.
it's happening.
And it's just everyone is so funny. The cast is so great. Damon Wayans Jr. is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like,
Everyone commits to how fucking big they go here. Like, this is, and nobody's playing small. Yeah, like, everyone has some really ridiculous shit they have to do.
I'll hit you with body shots. Yeah, Eva Mendez.
Dude, Eva Mendez just committing, like, singing Pimps Don't Cry, right. like the most heartfelt thing. And then, man, the exchange back and forth with the grandmother gets me every time. Yeah. You say things that are too private. Like, it's so funny. I don't want to do this.
Yeah. And I love how Will Ferrell knows when she's lying. And then that's when she's like, when she starts saying, yeah, that's it. Right. Yeah, that sounds like yeah.
I also appreciate that, like, we know the joke. They push it one too far, and then they push it enough times that it comes back and it's funny all over. Yes.
Right, you know? Exactly.
But, like, they're going to muscle through.
I mean, what's crazy to me is what makes it funny again is how much it devastates this old lady.
Right.
Like, her begging her, like, please don't make me do this. Yeah. This is so fucked up.
And it's also ridiculous that the cops or whoever was casing out the joint would not think, like, why the fuck is this old lady crossing the street four times?
They just went with Scooby-Doo logic on
that. I loved that. I loved, like, how much of it was felt rooted in, like, very real, very detailed crimes, but everything was so silly that, but, like, it was such an interesting pairing to go, like, so by the book and play it real for this enormous, lofty financial crime that's happening around such a dumb movie.
Right.
Yeah, this movie, it is the timing, I guess, because it was 2010, it's almost like every movie had to reference the financial crisis.
Was, I feel like
and
this
it
was
really
Adam,
gets into it,
this
though.
This was
you
Adam
know?
McKay's way into The Big Short. He was, I think he wanted to, he was obviously super interested in these crimes that were happening at the time. So it was, it was great that, like, you get that along with this just insane tone, like, where you don't question that the cops aren't asking about this old lady.
Right.
Or you don't mind that, like, we're going into these deep, reverent memories of Will Ferrell as a pimp in college.
the slow
as he's
burn
figuring
on,
out he was a pimp. Yeah, like, it's so fucking other level dumb. I mean, Derek Jeter is credited second
angel.
In this movie, by the way, which I think is hilarious.
Crazy.
They credit him above Mark Wahlberg.
So, and did you sit through the credits?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the credits, no jokes, just the factual breakdown.
So interesting.
Corporate
and like and devastating.
Yeah.
When you see just how big those numbers are. It's
the credits almost like wipe the smile off your face.
Yeah.
Like
you
enjoyed the movie. It was funny. You're like, oh shit, this is oof.
Some dark shit behind this. Are actually guys like this. By Steve Coogan, by the way, is so fucking great in this.
Yeah.
Like him playing like the slimy villain is amazing.
Oh yeah.
He's just such a fucking scumbag, and I love that he keeps bribing them.
That's
with, like,
the thing. Yeah,
clear bribes. Like,
yeah,
and like,
they
and
don't
they
realize
don't realize it's a bribe until they're halfway through Jersey Boys. Or whatever.
Right. Cut to them kicking the door back open.
Come on, man. Yeah. It's such an like an old farcical type shtick that they have running throughout, and it just. I think that's why this movie is so interesting to me, because it's so many different things at once.
Right. You know, our movie has elements of that because it's this parody of curling and black first movies, but then the actual curling scenes are going to be pretty epic and done.
And that's the right way to do it.
When
you treat the subject with enough reverence that it's like, we're making fun of it, but we also love it.
Right, exactly.
Like, that comes through.
Yeah.
And that's what this feels like to me. It feels like I'm making fun of dumb buddy cop movies, but I also worship them. Like, I loved them when I was a kid. I assume that's where this came from.
Exactly.
And the other way in which... that this film reminds me of Black Ice and what we're doing is that there's this the Family Guy sense of the cutaway, but in Family Guy it's a total non sequitur. Like, part of the joke is that they utterly go away from the moment.
Right.
This has these cutaways like the Broadway thing, but it's connected to what's
going
on. So you get the full absurdity of watching them like weep in Jersey Boys with their heart. But they're there for a reason. It's motivated too. So
Right.
Yeah, it goes to so many different strange places, like both literally like and figuratively, that you don't expect this movie to go.
Yeah, like Michael Keaton, how he has to also work at Target. He's not just the chief of police.
Oh, fucking Bed Bath & Beyond.
Oh my god, I love it so much. He's talking about like the new aisle that they're gonna clean up, and then he's like checking the clipboard, like, I'm the serial rapist in Crown Heights, or like, oh wait, never mind. Sorry, I'm getting confused.
But if you live in Crown Heights,
yeah, yeah, like don't forget.
Yeah. I mean, you know, do be afraid, but like, there is something to worry about. He's so fucking. I mean, I could just. I'll take Michael Keaton in a comedy any day.
Absolutely.
Because he didn't do a ton of them, but he is just so great, and he gets how to play this character so silly and like so over the top and like hammy. Overacting, and it fucking works perfectly.
Yeah. There's that little the moment that with the light touch where he says something along the lines. He drops some like cold one-liner when they're fighting about them breaking up.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this tiny flick of his eyes to Will Ferrell where he's like, that was a pretty sweet line I just
said. Right, yeah. He's got so many little subtle things, but then he also goes, I don't know if I laugh harder at any part in this movie than when he's over Will Ferrell, who had just been shot, and he's screaming, he's dying! Yeah, right. This man is dying! Like, he is losing it. Like, this is a police captain, and he's freaking out. Like, it's just such a funny choice to me to go that huge with it.
And it's in that moment, Will Ferrell's like, I'm sorry, Gene. And then he catches himself. I'm sorry. I know, Captain. He's like, no, you can call me Gene. Outside of the office.
Outside of the office. Oh my God. I really, and that's another thing too that we should get into besides Michael Keaton. Just every little side character is so funny and given. There's no one there that's just window dressing. Every character has like a little something about, a little funny, weird hook to them that like every time they pop back up, you're like, all right, now I know what kind of like variety of strange comedy I'm about to get.
Right.
I want to know why all of America isn't talking about how Rob Riggle can do no wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always awesome in everything that he's in.
Yeah. I mean, there are
I won the fight.
There's a lot of those guys in this movie. Yeah. Like Rob Hubel's another one of them who, like, even in the smallest parts, or Zach Woods is in it barely.
Oh yeah,
he's and like, he's so funny.
For a moment, it's perfect. But,
hey, how's the wife? She died. Okay, great. And it's just there's very little downtime in this movie. It's never not funny.
Yeah.
Like, even when it's being heartfelt, like Mark Wahlberg's whole, you know, whatever his weird relationship is with Francine.
And dance.
But he's so pathetic, it's funny. So even when he's sad, this movie never comes down.
Yeah.
The ballet, they reference later that he learned to play harp.
Yeah.
Like, to make fun of some gay kid.
Right, yeah,
like,
right.
You learn those dances ironically? Right. Like, man, it is just, there's so many little things that you pick up each time you watch this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. That's freaking gold.
Part of what they do well, too, is they sustain the tension of their absurdity. So there's never a moment where Mark Wahlberg makes a joke like, well, I never really loved her anyway, kind of thing. You know, like that hysterical, manic commitment to his love for her.
Yes.
They can make it as crazy as they want, and yet it is a real part of his character because they have the consistency. You know, they stick with it. They're making the bold choice and sticking with it.
And I mean, on top of that, to give it another insane layer, though, he's like simultaneously kind of in love with Will Ferrell's wife.
Right.
Like, or at least obsessed with her. Like, that's one of the funniest running gags in this movie.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, wait, no, but seriously, who is that lady? Yeah. Like, what is happening right now? I feel like a lot of comedies have tried to do that sort of thing since.
Right.
Like, I cannot wrap my head around what's happening, but this is just so perfectly done, and Will Ferrell being so matter-of-fact about it, and so shitty to his wife.
Right. Oh, my God.
Like, just like, you look like garbage right now.
Like a hobo.
Yeah. And, you know, it's great. I think, like, killing those two guys in the beginning of the movie sets up everything.
Yeah. It signs you up for the rest of it. You're like, well, if they're going to go there 5 minutes in.
Because no joke is...
this movie's going to go off the rails.
No joke is, like,
Yeah.
No, there's no joke that happens where you're like, that wouldn't happen even in this world. Like, everything is up for grabs.
Yeah. Yes.
Because guys just jumped off a building.
It becomes like a cartoon.
Right? Yeah. And it wasn't even close. It wasn't like they missed the car they were running for. They even put, they're like, it's, you know, they just jumped for no reason. Like, I don't even care.
There weren't even any bushes. Yeah. Like, what were they? It's hard. That's another amazing part of it, too, is them trying to analyze that at the field. Yeah. Like, what were they thinking, though? Like, can we address? My wife hadn't seen this movie before, and like halfway through that jump, you know, when they start to really flail, she's like, wait, are they about to die? Like, you start to see there's nothing they could possibly land on.
And they just show like the clarity of pornography.
Yes.
All the way down to splat.
Yeah. Dead stop. Oh, my God. It's so much fun. I mean, it reminds me, too, of Semi-Pro in the way that I think it sneaks up on you a little bit. It looked like a very predictable, I've seen this movie before.
Right.
But it goes in such a different direction. And I think it's partially because you've seen Will Ferrell's version of those movies before. Like, Semi-Pro felt like, all right, but wasn't that Talladega Nights, and now we put a ball in his hand?
Right.
But, like, that's not at all what it was. But that's how it's sold to you. And this felt like, I don't know, I've seen Will Ferrell in a lot of, I've seen him play this character. This, like, completely socially out of touch, awkward dude.
But you don't know,
so brilliantly done here.
Because they set him up with the what's the band he loves playing? Was it REO Speedwagon?
Little River Band.
You just can't see the pimp thing coming.
Yeah. No.
And then every time they go back to it, and he gets deeper, and it's like, but he's still like the nerd at the station. Yeah. Mark Wahlberg is still giving him shit.
He's the same dude who in detail explained to him why the lion tuna thing wasn't going to work out for Mark Wahlberg. That is such a great way to establish that character where you're like, this guy is just operating on a different level.
Here's the math formula I'll throw out for this one. It's the Will Ferrell we know and love from those, you know, balls out comedy, plus the sensitive, emotionally deep Will Ferrell from the drama film Stranger Than Fiction. It's both of those things because he never just gets like big and brassy in this.
Right,
or when he does, it's motivated. Like,
bad cop.
Yeah, yeah. He's really sensitive. He can be touched, you know, like he's like giving gifts.
Oh,
he
gives
a, you know, a beautiful, touching gift.
He's the nicest guy. Yeah. Yeah. What does he give him? He gives him a mug. And
the female body inspector.
Throws it out the window on the bridge.
And what's great about that is like, he's obviously making fun of that joke in a sense, but how long it goes on, how much he commits to it.
Right. But I guess you don't understand. Hilarious. Like, are you get it? Because it's like, looks just like the FBI's real insignia.
And he goes, I have a sick sense of humor.
Yeah. Don't ever give me something like that again. Well, you can bet I don't. He even has like boundaries. Like, you know what Will Ferrell's character.
Me. Yeah. Yeah. Boundaries. Yeah. I mean, you see that with his wife, too. I mean, it starts off with this very weird tone to it where you don't know that he's doing it on purpose. So you're like, this guy's kind of a monster to his wife. Like, he keeps talking down to her. He talks about how terrible her food is.
Right,
and
shit. Right.
And like, before we meet her, he calls her like a burly woman or a big woman who likes to throw it around or something like that.
Right.
But like, then as the movie progresses, you see like he loves her so much.
Right.
And they have this sick, twisted relationship. But like, He is. You get that like sweet, earnest Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And I love, there's so much love, but I still do love Arnie Palmer alert. Arnie Palmer alert.
Right.
Who wants on the Arnie Palmies? And then that guy is like chasing after him to say, you have to make love to my wife. Like, you can't leave.
Brick Elman, man. Every time he shows up in anything, I'm like,
he's
I love
hilarious.
Him.
He's
yeah, so there's great. Another one of those, the
yep,
pocket.
Another one of those guys that's just
the,
yeah. always amazing.
I think it's so good to see a movie like Naked Gun is a good way where, but it's like you said, it's perfect. It they don't go away like Family Guy. It's still all connected and it's still, it's actually pretty good, like well written that. The whatever the journey is, whatever they're going after, they never lose sight of it.
Yeah.
Like, not even, I mean, the flashbacks are the flashbacks, but they never lose sight of.
Yeah. In a way, the bribery, all that joke with it that they pushed through with the bribery is actually there to, like, subconsciously tell us they can't be bribed.
Yeah. You
know? Right, right.
It actually
they can be duped, but they can't be bribed. Right, right. I like he offers them straight up. How about I just give each of you $10 million?
It's not a bribe.
It's not a bribe.
Right.
Like, that is exactly a bribe. Let's get into these games. I mean, I could kind of gush about this movie all day, but let's have some fun with it. Let's make a drinking game out of this movie. Oh, so every time something repetitive happens, you have to take a drink. For me, I want you to, it's only going to be a couple drinks, but you got to pound a whole 40 every time Will Ferrell snaps back into gator mode.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
I mean,
that's
what an insane,
it's like a soccer game where ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah. But it packs a punch. I mean,
gator.
It's such an insane choice to be like, yeah, what if we had this little running gag where he used to be unknowingly be a pimp in college,
right.
And he freaks out on his wife at one point and says, like, Gator's bitches better be wearing jimmies. Like, this is
as
a
she's telling
monstrous
them they're
character.
Having their first child.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, actually, one of my buddies, we still, like, when it's something we don't accept, we still say, Gator ain't never been about that.
Oh, yeah. My go-to version of it was Gator don't play no shit.
Right, right. Like, yeah.
Never been about that playing no shit. Like, it is. Oh, man. I mean, Will Ferrell just, you know, I don't know if you guys know, but he's good.
Yeah,
he's very he's really good at what he does.
Mine is, depending on how much you drink, this might get you where you need to go. But every time you think Mark Wahlberg is doing an impression of himself, like, there's some moments where you're like, you get the sense he's seen people impersonate him, and he's leaning into the breathing. And hey, guys, I mean, what are we gonna do? Right. You know, that, like,
yeah, definitely, dude. He plays such an intense character that, like, he's worked up
right,
the whole time.
Right, exactly.
So, like, yeah, he. I thought the same thing. He sounds like Andy Samberg's impression of him.
Right.
What do you think, Brent?
So this one's just going to get you slammed. There's no two ways about it. And here's the beauty part of it is it actually could work, I believe, for any Mark Wahlberg film.
Okay.
But it's particularly good in this way because of how often we cut away and from two teams. It's all about the way his brow furrows. So one team, when his brow furrows and you get the vertical wrinkles between his eyebrows when he's in consternation... You drink.
And this is detail. You gotta pay close attention.
Yeah. And the other team is the horizontal brow wrinkles when he's incredulous or surprised. Yeah.
That's
and sometimes
great.
Sometimes both people are drinking at the same time or in rapid fire succession. So yeah.
But and you're paying really close attention to Mark Wahlberg. And
yeah.
That's great.
I love it. That's hilarious. Let's come up with a new Oscars category. This movie was not nominated. Home any Oscars. But if it was nominated in a category that it would definitely win, what would that category be? What do you think, Dwayne?
I would say best silly movie with an actual message. Because even without the credits, you still get the sense that there's a little bit of a message, ever so subtle message about capitalism going awry or, you know, unchecked.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, his talk about excess in the early parts of the movie is so gross and also so true. Like, obviously, I don't think anyone's saying those words in the order he said them. No one's explicitly saying it,
but
they're all preaching it.
That's been said, exactly.
It's such a believable thing. I was right kind of in the same lane with you. It was most unexpectedly educational film. Because it's like quietly teaching you about these crimes that happened, I mean, obviously they were massively publicized and it was kind of right under everybody's nose,
right.
But so few people knew really what happened.
Yeah.
You know, we knew banks got bailed out and we were upset, but like we didn't really know what went on. When I saw the number that was attached to Bernie Madoff, the amount that he stole, I was like, if you gave me 100 guesses, I would have never gone that high. It was like $65 billion.
Yeah. How do you spend that? How do you not have it to give back on any level?
Right.
I mean, at what point do you say, like, you know, I could probably just stop doing this.
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm good and I haven't been caught yet. So
right.
Like,
exactly.
It's like, no, just keep. It's just that. And that gives you such a great insight into the scale of all these crimes.
And I love we're in everything, like,
right.
Oh, yeah. It was such a great, like, nod to you cannot do without us at this point, and those companies exist.
Including Mark Wahlberg's little subtle barely singing along to it when they bring up the themes.
Brent, what do you think, man? New Oscars category.
I think I'm going to connect with what you were saying about Mark. You know, it's parodying the buddy cop movie, and also Mark Wahlberg is like parodying himself at some time. So I'm just going to say best caricature movie. It's a caricature of the thing.
That's a good
way
of explaining it.
Yeah, that is right. And it does a great job of it.
Yeah. Let's pitch the sequel to this movie, which, God willing, will be made. I don't know if I want an actual sequel. I'm thinking more of like a sister sequel. I think I just want these two guys to literally remake Lethal Weapon. And I think I want...
Like a shot for shot?
Yeah. And I think I want Will Ferrell to play Riggs. I feel like...
Oh, that's pretty dope.
Just letting him lean into this utter psychopath.
Yeah.
And then Mark Wahlberg, I don't know. We'll put him in blackface like Tropic Thunder. That'll go over. Dwayne, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you would have to switch those. But this is a little detailed. But so the sequel is the other guys take a vacation in San Francisco. And they end up entwined in a case involving the triads, Russian mafia, and a Silicon tech giant. They uncover a sex slave ring and end up investing in the best app of the year.
Did you write this script already?
No.
He's pitching it at that same place today.
Right. Is that where you were?
I was like, Brent, just go talk to those people.
It's right, like, back. I got to go to the bathroom again.
I thought he was
it's
right
like
behind
here
me.
Half the time.
Right. A little detail, but yeah, something
I
like
love
that.
It. That's great. Like it's such a fitting, like, what's the crime of,
exactly,
of this time?
Exactly, right.
Yeah, that's kind of a, you took it sort of a Beverly Hills Cop 2 kind of play.
Exactly right, yes. Yeah.
Likewise, I'm kind of mashing up two other like sequel treatments here. So it begins like Ghostbusters 2, where these guys have gotten out of the cop game. You know, maybe Will Ferrell has gone back to pimping or some like more G-rated version of the same skill set.
Right.
You know,
right.
Maybe Mark Wahlberg, he's dancing now, but they're out of the game. But now this is the mashup part. Which is the Die Hard with Jeremy Irons, where he's the cousin of Hans Gruber?
Is that two?
I think three. I think it's two.
Yeah.
Isn't two with the airplane in Washington, or is that the,
right?
This might be with a vengeance. I thought
it was with a vengeance, not two. Because I think it was with a vengeance.
Is it on a ship? You're talking about the one on a ship,
yeah,
right? Yeah, that's three. Then two is an airplane.
Okay. So the sense that, I forget the name of the dude who's like the ripped, tall hitman type in this film, who was in the HBO series Rome.
Oh, the guy who's the Australian guy.
Yeah, the Australian guy.
So, what is his name? Ray Parker? No.
Ray Parker Jr.
Ghostbusters. It all comes full circle, guys. I'll get his name.
So his cousin or whatever.
Ray Stevenson.
Yeah, we get some awesome villain that you can sink your teeth into, who's coming back targeting these two, brings them back into the cop game, and is also a hilarious, great villain somehow.
That's actually pretty solid. Like, we got two and three. I don't know.
Right. I guess I'm talking about three is what I'm talking
about.
All right, let's take any character other than the ones played by Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, make a spinoff movie or TV show, who and why? I mean, for me, it's just hands down, it's Captain Jean.
Yeah, it's gotta be right.
He's so amazing. It's called Crazy Sexy Cool. It's another accident. The accidental TLC references was maybe the dumbest of all the running jokes, and still was funny every damn time.
I like
time.
How it hurt Will Ferrell.
And you kept thinking, like, even at the end when he has a bullet in him, and you think he's gonna be like, "Yeah, I'm just fucking with you."
Right.
He's still like, "No, I have no idea what you're talking about." Dwayne, what do you think, man?
Web two. I think if it's Keaton, we'll do a TV show on Captain Jean.
Yeah.
Workplace comedy, but half the time he's at the Bed Bath and Beyond, and half the time he's at the precinct.
Great.
Like that would be amazing.
His name, by the way, in the movie is Captain Gene Mock, named after former California Angels baseball manager Gene Mock.
Oh, very nice.
A touching tribute.
I didn't know that. Or the guys, Damon Wayans Jr. and Riggle. Mm-hmm. Those guys can have their own sort of like TV show where they're just awful cops.
Right.
You know.
And awful at what they do or shitty people?
Shitty. No, bad at what they do.
Yeah.
But somehow they by hook or by crook, they get it done, but they're just really bad at it.
Yeah, and that, really they congratulate themselves for
exactly. Yeah, that could be fun to watch. Yeah.
Brent, what do you think, man? Take it home for us.
All right, so it's Gene. It's Cap and Gene again, of course. And I'm going to say it's his show, and somehow something's going down where it's actually his team from Target that helps him solve the crime.
Oh, so very nice.
They get involved, and you actually like are really rooting for them. So all the comedy and the ludicrousness of him being torn, you know, he's like Hamlet being torn in two ways or something like that, or there's probably a better show.
His worlds collide, man.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
it.
But those guys, the Target team, the teenagers, the pimply awkward, you know.
I like it. I like
they're hooking up with each other on their breaks or whatever. They come through. What would any titles? I didn't think of coming up with a title for that.
Well... What is it called? The stock room?
Yeah.
Something about the stock room, or, you know, in the back.
Something about the stock room. I'm just trying to think of all words associated with that and make a cop pun, and I'm getting nothing.
Right.
I'm no Robin Williams.
Is there any break time? Anything in there? Or something, you know?
Yeah, sure. Break time.
Yeah, break time is good.
Break time in the stock room. Break time in the stock room. Featuring Captain G.
Yeah. It goes on and on.
Yeah, I would like it too if then guys at the station, at the precinct, they're like teaching them, you know, helping them fold towels. And
yeah, totally.
Take a towel and make it look like an elephant or whatever the case.
And I guess Captain Gene's son, who is using his college time to experiment with bisexuality and becoming a DJ, is also a key player.
And he tells people who don't need to know that it's
you got a son, he's bisexual. Okay, cool, you know?
And that's why he needs the job at Target to put his kids in college, right? So he can...
I mean, this man clearly needs his own movie or TV show. I would sign up for that.
But you guys made me think another kind of cool thing would be the ghost of the guys who died. Like
Danton and Highsmith.
Yeah, so a guy gets hired and like he sees them. And no one else sees them, and they're
like a rodent.
They're helping him through.
Yeah,
like the sixth man,
giving him bad advice, good advice, that kind of thing.
Or like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern kind of situation.
Yeah,
you know?
I like it
because it could be a think piece. Why make it comedy?
I would consider this a think piece. I think it is. I qualify.
At the end of the day,
Brent, thanks so much for being here, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Tell everybody where to find you online, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. The best place to go is just to brentbishop.com. And you can also find right now there's like 30 of those Just Sayin' PSAs there too. You could also go to Just Sayin' with no G, justsayinpsa.com. But the one-stop shopping, brentbishop.com.
Yeah,
and you can see our short there too, Black Ice.
You can see our short there too, Black Ice. I'm FunnyDP on Twitter. DwaynePerkins.com is the website, and Dwayne Perkins on the gram. Mainly kicking it in and around L.A. And then for New Year's, I'll be in Marin doing a show New Year's Eve. I'll have to post that up. But if you're in Marin County, come see me.
I am at TK Kelly Comedy on all social media. I'll be in LA for the time being, getting back to shows properly after raising my baby in January. So check out my calendar for dates. And also follow us at Movie Nightcast on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. We love hearing your feedback. We love hearing you suggest movies too. It's always a big help to remind us of great movies we should have covered but haven't yet. So let us know. Brent, thanks again for being here, buddy.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, man.
Tune in next week, guys.
You've been listening to Movie Night with Dwayne Perkins and TK Kelly. Be sure to like them on Facebook. Just search for Movie Night Podcast Show. And follow them on Twitter. Just search for @MovieNightCast.